From Banff, Alberta, this is the GCN Show.
Welcome to the GCN Show.
Coming up this week, the Netherlands is trialling speed limits on bike lanes, which has local cyclists up in arms. Is it a good idea? Is it even enforceable? We discuss.
We've also got some future tech from Canyon, some current tech from Pinarello Colnago, Zwift, Wahoo and Core, some good and bad news from recent ultra endurance record attempts, and why Mathieu van der Poel is harming the image of cycling. This week in the world of cycling, we learned that the greatest race of the summer, at least according to us, is over before it even really began.
Yeah, sadly, Lael Wilcox has abandoned her attempt to break the round-the-world record after just 3,000 miles due to heat exhaustion. So she rode from Chicago to Nova Scotia, flew across the Atlantic, but on landing in Europe, faced a brutal heat wave, and Lael found it impossible to maintain the pace that she needed.
I'm gutted for her. We're gutted for her. Yeah. All of you are as well. But hopefully, she has another go at it at some point. For now, though, Mark Beaumont's record of 78 days is still safe. We also learned this week that Mathieu van der Poel can actually do time trials when he can be bothered.
Yep, in the Tour of Switzerland, he lost out to Pogacar by just 0.04 seconds after how many kilometres was it?
I think it was around 20.
That's like a proper time trial.
Proper time trial.
But then, to add insult to injury, he was hit with a 500 Swiss francs, so that's over $600, fine for sitting in the hot seat with no top on, something the UCI deemed as inappropriate attire.
Now, we thought about presenting the show today topless and a show of support to van der Poel, but we cannot afford the fine nor the loss of viewers.
Maybe one for the end of show nugget, perhaps.
Good point. Yeah, stick around, everyone.
Yeah, no, apparently just lost 20,000 viewers, Dan. They're not hanging around. Right, finally this week, we learned that the world's most cycling-friendly country, the Netherlands, is going to be introducing speed limits for cyclists.
Now, initially, it was done as a trial in Houten, which is near Utrecht, with the idea of finding out if cyclists are willing to slow down and whether they have any clue, actually, as to what speed they're riding in the first place.
Now, what was the speed limit, I hear you ask? Well, 20 kilometres per hour, which is 12 miles per hour. Slow for a road bike, although on a typical Dutch bike, probably actually not a bad speed, right?
Certainly not too slow. A Dutch town, no. Now, those of you who've watched the GCN show recently, back on the 28th of April to be precise, you'll be aware there's been a recent increase in cycling accidents and deaths in recent years over there. So in 2025, for example, over 80,000 cyclists took a visit to A&E after a cycling-related incident, whilst there was an increase in deaths of 14%, up to 281.
Yeah, now, as we said at the time, those stats don't tell the whole story, do they? So, for example, with more older people able to keep cycling thanks to e-bikes, you are likely to get more fatalities simply because older people are sadly more likely to die. However, the Dutch government is rightly considering ways to try and reduce these statistics, including the possibility of mandatory helmets, which will also cause uproar, and now the aforementioned speed limits.
Now, reading the comments under that April GCN show from Dutch residents was enlightening.
It was, yeah.
Say, wasn't it? Lots of people talked about that increase in older people riding newly purchased e-bikes, but actually saying that the bikes are too fast and with brakes that are too powerful for their reflexes, and that this is part of the reason for the increase in accidents and deaths there.
I've not been there to check, Dan, but I struggle to imagine that that is true. I just feel like e-bikes are so much easier to ride, safer to ride. I just can't imagine old people like...
Well, I guess there's an initial surprise with them because some of them do accelerate quite quickly, even if there is a cut-off speed of 25 kilometres per hour.
But brakes too sharp?
I don't know. I reckon on some old town bikes, you could get a surprise with some new disc brakes if you pull them on with the same force. But again, yeah, I've got no experience.
Yeah. Anyway, Luca Pugh was one of many commenters to highlight the change in the types of bikes being used as well. So he said, here in the Netherlands, there has been an invasion of electric fat bikes that have effectively replaced scooters. Now, the problem is that they are not yet regulated and can be too easily modified to go faster than 40k an hour, even without pedalling at all.
Motorbikes, then, basically.
Well, technically, Dan, I believe e-scooter. is the term. But you're right in that I certainly don't think that you can class anything that doesn't require you to turn the pedals as a bicycle. No. And I mean, this is a big problem in most countries, right? Not just the Netherlands. Particularly, as Luca Piu goes on to say, when in the hands of young kids is a recipe for disaster, especially in crowded cities.
Well, thank goodness they haven't given them to old people, Simon.
Well, exactly. God forbid that happens, Dan.
I guess the question is then whether speed limits are the answer to this problem. We don't yet have the result of the recent trial yet, but they've actually trialled this before in the Netherlands.
That's right, yeah, back in 2024 in Amsterdam, apparently, for a couple of months on some of the busier streets. So cyclists were advised to ride at less than 20k an hour on the bike paths, while faster cyclists, like road cyclists and e-bike riders, were allowed up to 30k an hour if they were on the road, not the bike path. We should probably say the road had a 30k an hour speed limit as well, didn't it?
Yeah, these are very central city roads. The study found that very few cyclists in the end chose to share the road with motorised vehicles, less than 15%, which I guess is understandable, whilst the speed of cyclists on the bike paths remained similar, as did the amount of congestion.
Yeah, which makes sense, right, given that very few cyclists switched from the bike path to the road. Anyway, 2 years on, a second trial has been done, and a third trial will be conducted in Amsterdam in September. As you can imagine, it sparked a lot of debate in a country with as many passionate cyclists as the Netherlands.
It has. One argument is that cyclists cannot be prosecuted or fined for breaking a speed limit. This is because they don't have license plates on the bike, so that 20 kilometres per hour limit will remain a guideline rather than a strict law, unless the law is changed, of course.
Yeah. It's weird, though, isn't it? Because here in the UK, we obviously also don't have license plates, thank goodness, but you can get done.
Yeah, I guess it's just down to the specifics of the wording of the law in different countries.
Although you actually can't get done for speeding, can you? It's reckless, wanton and reckless cycling or something along those lines.
I wouldn't know, sir.
Well, yeah, I think so. But anyway, the other opinion is that it will do nothing to improve safety because actually it's the reckless riders that are the dangerous ones and they will ignore the guidelines. Or old people who can't control their e-bikes, of course.
That one really has peed you off, Simon, hasn't it?
I find it hard to believe, so I wait to see it for myself.
Okay. There's also the fact that many town bikes used by Dutch cyclists don't have speedometers and therefore no way really of knowing whether they're going to be meeting the guidelines of speed or not.
That is a very good point, isn't it? Now, since the results of the trials are either unavailable or inconclusive, all we can really do is give our opinion on whether this is a good idea or a bad idea.
And before we give the opinion, we should stress we're not claiming we are right.
No.
But based on our own experiences, we think that the number one priority everywhere should be to set clear laws on those e-scooters and laws that are enforced with decent fines and penalties.
Yeah, I mean, that does feel like it would be a sensible place to start, doesn't it? Lawmakers, they've just been really slow off the mark with what is a relatively new technology, but it
has... Relatively, yeah.
I mean, it has been around for a little bit, yeah. And the fact that these bikes bear more resemblance to a moped than an actual bike, but yet the people riding them treat them more like a bike than a moped.
Exactly, yes. And members of the public as well think of them as nuisance cyclists rather than nuisance motorbike riders, which I think is a problem in itself, isn't it? Because that means it puts us all in the same category, which we're clearly not.
Yeah. Also, the fact is, those bikes, I mean, they look quite good fun.
Oh, great fun, yeah. As a 15-year-old, I would have loved one of them to get around on.
Absolutely. And if you think that you can't get done by the police for riding around on one...
No, but I also just think that there's a different psychological component when you've got an electric kind of motor on your bike versus one with, you know, exhaust fume coming out that you have to put petrol in. It's just, in people's minds, they are just bicycles still. But they're not. They're just electric motorbikes.
Yeah. I've got to say as well, I am actually all for speed limits on shared-use bike paths.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it seems like a very sensible idea when cyclists are going to be in close proximity to pedestrians, children, dogs, etc. Like, I mean, like, most cyclists on shared use bike paths ride in a way that allows for other people to be there with children, dogs, whatever else. But some people don't.
I definitely think it's worth considering the nuance of the type of bike path, because there'll be a lot of people watching this who've got a very quiet bike path near to them where you think, well, I don't want to be restricted to 20 kilometres per hour. But the fact is, we are talking about the Netherlands. As we've said a lot of times, as you well know, there are thousands and thousands of cyclists commuting to work, going to school every single day. And so they are really congested. And you don't want somebody on an e-scooter doing 30 kilometres per hour somewhere.
No. What's weird, isn't it, is that the answer to all of the kind of issues of friction and safety on roads and paths is basically segregation, isn't it? You've got to segregate the cars from the bikes, you've got to segregate the e-bikes from the pedestrians. Everyone just needs their own little lane, or just act in a way that takes account for all of the other different types of road users around.
Yeah, I always slow right down for any dog walkers that I see when I'm gravel riding in the New Forest, or even when I'm going down on Lorraine's e-bike to town, just mainly because I want to make sure they feel safe, but also for the reputation of cyclists, if I'm honest.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm one of the good guys, basically, what I'm saying.
Would we have thought anything else, Dan, basically? Yeah. But we would love to know your thoughts on this as well, actually. Not whether Dan is one of the good guys, but on the whole speed limits for bike paths and particularly e-bikes as well. We know from the last show in April that we have a lot of Dutch viewers, have a lot of experience on riding on the bike paths where these trials are taking place. So we'd love to hear what you think as well about potential speed limits and what you would do to improve safety for cyclists if you were in charge.
Look forward to reading your comments. Right, moving on. Sorry, not just before we move on, but moving on to a plug for our GCN shop. You might have noticed we are both sporting slightly different looking T-shirts this week, ready for the biggest bike race on earth, which starts in less than 2 weeks' time.
Wow.
You're now able to purchase both of these designs over at shop.globalcyclingnetwork.com.
And we've got more designs coming.
We have.
Wow, yeah, so stay tuned for those. We've also added this.
That one? It is that one, but there's one just down here as well, Sorry, give me a sec.
Oh, there we go.
There we go.
To our prints collection. Yep. So like those from the Spring Classics is available in A4, which we have here, and the larger A3 size as well. And if you purchase one, it will come framed just like the one you see here, which is a mega bonus, isn't it?
It is, yeah. People have been loving these. As a reminder, all purchases from our online store help fund our free-to-view videos here on GCN. If you'd like to head directly there, just scan the QR code that will hopefully be on screen now.
And now it's time for cycling shorts.
Cycling shorts now, and we're going to start with a whole raft of bonkers futuristic tech that has just landed from Canyon.
So the two biggest stories are, firstly, a wild-looking concept road bike and accompanying smart helmet with built-in heads-up display.
Yeah, the road bike looks, as you can see, like a futuristic air road, but the really novel stuff is the prototype Predict technology, which Canyon say is a 360-degree sensor array to anticipate road hazards, anticipating other road users, tracking group ride dynamics, advising on cornering speeds, and predicting tricky surface conditions before the rider even notices them. That's quite a lot.
There's a lot going on there.
There is, yeah. I mean, sure. Like, it's taken me 30 years to even get half decent at that stuff.
Well, Canyon might be a bit more advanced than you.
Possibly, yeah.
Anyway, the rider then gets that data through a display screen built into the bars or via the prototype heads-up display smart helmet called the Stinger Smart Helmet. The idea behind this is to try to bring into cycling some of the new safety features that you see in modern cars.
Can you imagine if they could somehow download what's in Matthew Vanderpool's brain as like a, you know, Canyon's like marquee rider, if they could like tap into that so you could get like Vanderpool-level like awareness and skills.
Could be great for some older Dutch e-bike riders, couldn't
it? Well, absolutely, yeah. Mm. If you think about it, all these old Dutch people with smart helmets riding around, I like it.
Just hop up onto the curb.
Yeah, well, it can be built into the bike. Little suspension forks.
Crikey. Yeah,
but it's got a dropper post.
You might be dreaming now.
Possibly. Now, the next big concept leads us on from the fact that they are similar to safety features of modern cars, because this is an e-bike that features V2X technology, which stands for Vehicle to Everything. Now, this actually isn't a prototype. This is a road light on V2X.
What is V2X, I hear you ask?
Well, what is V2X,
Dan? Thanks very much, Si. Well, essentially, it's a communication network between vehicles, infrastructure like traffic lights, and vulnerable road users like pedestrians and cyclists.
Yeah, so it's been around for a little while now, hasn't it? Like a handful of years. And the idea is for vehicles to be able to communicate with each other to share safety information on the world around them, and then communicate that to the drivers.
So in the context of a bike then, the new Canyon will be able to tell cars that it's there, which is a pretty seismic change, really, isn't it? It would also tell you, the rider, that the car is there through haptic signals that come through your handlebars, as well as your choice of head unit or phone.
Yeah, and that bit isn't just V2X, is it? Because it's also got a built-in rear-facing radar as well. The best bit for me, though, is the potential that could be unlocked through the infrastructure communication, i.e. your bike tells traffic lights that you're coming so that they can turn green. And if you think that sounds like wishful thinking, apparently it's tech that's currently being trialled in the Netherlands and Germany.
Yeah, they'll have to turn green pretty quick when I'm going there.
Well, not if there's a speed limit, mate.
No, true, they'd have plenty of warning. Although presumably, if that technology does work and it starts to become popular, which you'd imagine it would do, the lights can't turn green for everybody coming from all directions, can they? Because that could be mayhem.
Well, I did wonder that as well, yes. And I also slightly worry, like more than traffic light gridlock, whether it creates like a two-tiered safety system. Do you know what I mean? Like those that have and those that don't have V2X. Mm. So, you know, but equally, that doesn't also seem to be a reason not to do it.
Well, it's the same as the modern safety devices we mentioned in cars, right? Not everyone's got them yet.
No, true. Hey,
I'm sure this will be a love-hate tech development, so get involved in the comments with your opinions on that as well. Is this take you on, or does it take away from the simplicity of just riding a bike?
Right, moving on. Leo Wilcox might have ended her record attempt early, but elsewhere in Europe, some 3,000 miles north, in fact, another ultra-endurance rider was busy smashing a record.
We are talking, of course, about Sarah Ruggins. She completed her crossing of Europe from south to north in just 13 days, 20 hours and 27 minutes.
Which means she beat Dr. Ian Walker's previous record by 3 days and 32 minutes.
That's not really a sort of photo finish, is it?
No, it's really not, is it? What a bonkers record. Yeah. On average, she rode 436 kilometres a day, which is 271 miles, riding for up to 22 hours per day. And it also means that she has the women's record for the furthest distance cycled in a week. She's got 2-for-1.
Unbelievable. Massive congratulations to Sarah, because that is a monumental accomplishment.
Do you think she'll go for the round the world?
Well, it's a different ballgame. Logical next step, isn't it?
Yeah, can you scale up from 13 days at 436 kilometres a day to 78 days?
Might be a little early to ask her yet, but let the dust settle and the legs recover and the mind.
Yeah,
it does seem like the next logical step, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, some racing news now. We'll start with some really sad news for the Tour de France in that Wout van Aert is not going to be racing the event this year.
Yeah, I was gutted when I read that. Yeah. Unfortunately, a wound in his elbow got infected and it required a heavy dose of antibiotics, which meant that he didn't have time to get back into shape for the Tour.
And actually, it's going to be the first time he's missed the race since he first participated there all the way back in 2019.
Is that right?
Yeah. He's been massively missed, firstly by his team, of course, and Jonas Vingegaard, but also by the many fans that he has.
Jonas who?
Vingegaard. No, that's not right still, is it?
No, I was just reading a comment under last week's show that said, as a Dane, I think you've nailed that pronunciation.
With the help, like, it said, yeah.
And I was like, what was the pronunciation? Yeah, no, I can't remember.
Listen back to what I said last week.
Yeah. Anyway, the other news is that Tadej Pogacar claims that he is better than he's ever been.
Hard to argue with that, given what we saw from him in Switzerland last week, where he won 3 of the 5 stages and the general classification, of course. This is a quote he gave L'Equipe, the French newspaper, in an interview. He said that he'd ridden a test climb in Sierra Nevada last year that went so well, he didn't even think he'd ever beat it himself.
But guess what? He did it again this year. Yeah. And he smashed it. Yeah.
Not really what his rivals wanted to hear, I'm sure. They're going to have to resort to sort of topless in a hot seat for any kind of publicity these days, aren't they?
Maybe, yeah. But they'd have to have deep pockets for that, wouldn't they, as well? Perhaps Pogacar just had a big tailwind, though.
And low pressure, yeah. See where you go.
Well, does that help with the tailwind?
That is a good question, Si, and one that I do not know the answer to.
Where's Ollie Bridgewood?
Let's move on when
you need him.
Moving on then, or kind of, to a new bike that Pogacar is going to be using at the Tour de France and did use last week at the Tour de Suisse.
Yeah, this is Colnago's new time trial bike named the TT2. We spoke about this a few weeks back, didn't we, when Colnago first announced the details, but now we've been able to see it in use.
So the main difference is the weight, and it's quite a significant chunk they've saved. Frame is almost 300 grams lighter, the fork 140 grams, and the seat post 90 grams.
Yeah, so over half a kilo.
It's a lot, yeah.
That is a lot, isn't it? It's It's also got a more conventional internal headset with a very narrow 25mm steerer tube, which helped them make the head tube narrower. Mm.
Presumably with the aim of being more aero, although I think it only saves 2 watts at a certain speed that I forget.
He doesn't need 2 watts saved.
Not really.
I wouldn't say no to 2 watts.
Just finally, with that bike, as you would expect, there is more clearance for wider tyres, which most riders are opting for now.
Mm. Okay, sticking with Italian bike brands, Pinarello have just released a whole load of new colourways for their Dogma F, we can all get dreaming.
And these colourways have left Alex Payton frothing with excitement.
Yeah.
Although, to be fair, they are stunning. So the four colourways are Obsidian Emerald, Cobalt Phantom, Phantom Ice, and then my favourite, Si, which is Molten Sand.
Molten Sand.
I really like that one.
Put a brown saddle on that one.
You absolutely could, sir.
Yeah, classy. Yeah. You are hoping to get one, aren't you, presumably?
Of course I am, although I'm not too sure what my chances will be, but you can only hope. Meanwhile, Wahoo and Core have been working together, which means that the new updates on the Wahoo Element computers will now allow you to sync the two devices.
Yeah, so you'll be able to see your body temperature and skin temperature, but then also heat strain index and time spent in heat zones.
Which has left Ollie Bridgewood frothing with excitement, hasn't it? Although I don't think he got much heat training done on his recent visit to South Korea.
No. I mean, potentially could have warned him about hypothermia, though.
Yes, a warning light in blue.
Judging from his face in the photos that we've seen, he was well aware of
of how cold he was.
Of the general discomfort. Anyway, yes, that video, or videos in fact, will be coming soon. But just let me know that Rain Man is back with a vengeance. What was his name? Hijo de la Lluvia.
Is that what he's called?
That's what the Bolivians knew him as, yes.
There's one last piece of tech, and it's another collaboration that Zwift had done. So a couple of weeks ago, it was with Rocket Espresso Machines, and now it's a Bravura watch.
Yeah, is that how you say it?
I think so. We did look it up earlier.
All right.
Not you and I, me and Alex Payton.
Okay. The watch face uses some familiar Zwift power-up logos at 12, 3, 6 and 9 o'clock, and then a luminous ring modelled on their glowing Tron bike. And then it's also got a Zwift orange strap and a Zwift orange second hand.
Smart.
Second hand. Second hand?
No, you can get them new.
Second hand.
If you want to buy one new, the retail price is £1,100, $1,200 or €1,400.
There's only 100 available though, aren't there?
Oh, is there? Better get it in quick.
Apparently, yeah.
Right, we'll finish Cycling Shorts with a reminder that we currently have a G-Technic competition running.
Yeah, so Up for Grabs is an ultimate bike care kit, which includes everything you need to get your bike looking brand new.
Which you would know very well, Si, wouldn't you? Because Ollie used that kit to get your Pinarello road bike looking like new after you'd neglected it.
I didn't neglect it.
Looked like you had.
I rode it. For 40...
But didn't clean it.
I rode to work on it and it rained.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, I was at work, so I had to, quickly scurry from leaving my bike to actual working. And then when I came back to it at the end of that day...
You didn't clean yourself, let alone the bike.
Not really, no. But when I got back to it, unlike me, the bike did look a bit neglected.
Mm.
So it was unfortunate. But do you know what? I mean, the bike was immaculate before that, but I would be really interested to know what Ollie Bridge would do with one of my bikes that's a little bit older, like a couple of years.
He's not doing a second bike for you. I've seen just how much effort he took over your Pinarello to get it spick and span.
Well, I mean, like I said, I've got a Canyon that would really benefit as well from a little bit of detailing. And
well, let's wait for him to warm up after Korea. And then we can ask him then.
Yeah. Anyway, we've digressed. That ultimate bike care kit really is ultimate. And if you would like to enter, there is a link in the description below. Click on that and it will take you to the competition page. And it will give you all the details on how to enter. But you've got to get in quick because the competition closes on Friday of this week. We know that some of you watch the show after Friday, in which case you've missed your chance.
Better luck next time. It is time now for hack/bodge of the week. You can get involved in this part of the show by going to globalcyclingnetwork.com/uploader, where you can upload your photos and a description of any hacks or bodges that you've done yourself or seen out and about. Jan Ole is the first one. Jan Ole. I should have covered all bases.
I think that's a Scandinavian name.
Okay. Hi, I am hot waxing my chains using a crock pot. For safe handling of the chains, I typically wax 3 to 4 at the same time.
Crikey.
Show off.
That's a lot of chains.
I prepared myself a chain coupler scissor wire using a piece of an old mechanical shifting wire and a screw terminal. In German, Lüsterklemmer.
I don't think he's Scandinavian. I think he's German.
Well deduced, my dear Watson.
Thank you.
Right. Using end caps or soldering the ends of the wire is recommended.
I mean, that's pretty neat, isn't it? For those chain waxers out there, this you need a swizzle wire, don't you? So that you can actually fish your chains in and out and give them a little swizzle. And that looks quite neat, doesn't it?
It does look neat, yeah.
Yeah. 3 to 4 chains. I mean, I know it makes sense, and I know they're not the most expensive component, but I'm still quite impressed with that.
Well, Ollie swears by it, doesn't he? Because obviously, if he's suddenly in need of one, he's normally got 2 or 3 stored somewhere. But he also swears that it makes the chains last a lot longer. So although they're not a cheap item as such these days, especially the top-end ones, I guess if they do last longer, if you rotate 2 or maybe even 3 by waxing them,
it reminds
might save money in the long term.
It reminds me of when I was at school, Dan, and I had to wear a suit for my sixth form, and I had to have 2 pairs of trousers and rotate them, because otherwise you go through them.
Oh, I see.
A bit like that. So, of course, my trousers lasted longer because they only did half the amount of time.
Yeah. I've just bought myself 9 brand new pairs of boxer shorts. I looked secondhand, but I thought, I'll go new. But as you well know, in my sock and underpants drawer, so I've got a careful rotation technique to make sure they all get used equally.
I mean, Dan's sock and underpants drawers are things of beauty, aren't they, really?
Yeah. Shame I had to get rid of the ones that I bought 10 years ago.
Is it because you waxed them? It lasted a really long time.
Poor old Jan Ole, or Jan Ole, is waiting for a verdict on his chain swizzler. I'm going to say hack.
I mean, it is a hack, isn't it? Yeah. Nice. Yeah, nicely executed. Well done. Rowby. Who needs a truck, SUV, or even a car? Look at this cargo bike. So I saw it, he says, parked in front of a kiosk in Zurich, Switzerland. That the best garden service vehicle ever, it says. So what have we got on there? A lawnmower, a strimmer, I can see.
Yeah, and then the lawnmower bit that catches the grass is on top.
Oh, yeah, nice. I wonder whether there's a leaf blower on there, Dan, my least favourite of all garden implements. Can't see a leaf blower.
No.
That's cool, though, isn't it?
There's a lot going on there. I hope it's limited to 25 k's an hour. Wouldn't want to ride that thing too quickly.
Well,
it's heavy.
In Switzerland, you can have a number plate on your bike and then go 45 k's an hour.
Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah, Speed Pedelecs, they're called, and a very different type of thing.
Sounds like Pogacar must need a number plate on his bike, doesn't it?
Pretty much. I'm saying hack.
I'm saying hack as well. Almost forgot to give judgment then. J.R. Stegman. 3D printed Zwift Click mount. I didn't like the way that Zwift Click units attached to my handlebars. It took away some of the positions for my hands by taking up valuable real estate on the handlebars. So I designed and resin 3D printed my own mount that takes advantage of the existing out front Wahoo Ride computer mount and essentially creates a second handlebar that I can easily reach to operate the Zwift Clicks. It was designed using CAD software and uses a stick-on Wahoo mount made by KOM and available from Amazon.
I mean, I feel conflicted, Dan. On the one hand, that's a very nicely made gizmo for something that has helped J.R. Stegman. Yeah. But seriously, how many hand positions do you need?
I mean,
those are tiny, those things.
Well, they do. They should fit. If you're seeing this now and you're not listening to a podcast, these two things should fit on the part of the bar we can see in this picture that isn't covered by handlebar tape, which is not a part of the bar I often put my hands on.
Nope.
Also, this is completely off centre. I mean, look at where the bracket of the head unit is. So that right shifter is going to be close to the stem, and the left one's right over towards the left shifter.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I don't know about that.
No, I'm going bodge.
Yeah, I'm really. Sorry. Even though that's 3D printed.
This will be one of the first ever 3D printed bodges we've ever given.
I think it might be. Crikey. Yeah, all right. Moving very swiftly on then, after that controversy, Mike has sent this in, lights storage. So I used to put all my lights in a box, Mike says, and then have to rummage around to find them. But now I've mounted a kitchen roll holder onto the wall and attached my lights to them.
Mm.
That's quite neat, isn't it?
Use it to store their shade too, I see.
Oh, yeah, nice. Although presumably with some lights that need to be kind of like bolted onto your bike, that would be a bit of a pain in the bum because you need to have to unbolt them from your holder.
Which lights have to bolt on?
So I've got ones that mount to an out front light, an out front
Okay.
Computer mount. So, yeah. Like, I've got my Wahoo on top, and then, very pleasingly, my light is mounted centrally to my bike, so I don't have to have it on one side of the handlebars.
Well, Mike is not making a solution for your light side, he's making a solution for his own.
All right. Well, so what I was thinking, basically, when I read this, I was like, oh, that sounds good. That sounds like something I could do with, because I've got a drawer full of lights and I have to rummage. But actually, that's not. Right. It's okay. it's just not going to fit the bill, Mike, I'm afraid.
Yeah, well, I'm saying hack for that. Because my initial thoughts were, how many lights you got to have to lose the ones that you've got? But it's probably in a drawer full of other bits and pieces, and then you have got to rummage through a load of other rubbish to get to your lights.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to say hack as well, because he's clearly solved a problem that he's got. It's just, you haven't solved my problem, Mike, and I'm a bit cheesed off.
Yeah, he's annoyed.
Basically, yeah.
Right, thanks for your submissions from the last week. If it didn't get on the show, keep trying, and we'll get some more to you next week.
It is time now for Caption Competition, that part of the show where you get a chance to get your hands on a coveted GCN Camelback water bottle. All you got to do is put a witty caption in the comments section down below. We'll pick a winner next week. We'll give you the photo to caption in just 1 second, but we will start, as always, with the results from last week.
You'll remember the picture from last week, but if you don't, here it is. This is Liam Slock of Lotto Antimarché winning his first ever professional road race in flying style.
Oh,
yeah.
I think
you will agree. Our winner this week is Kay Khan, who put caption competition, Liam Slock completes the Grand Slam.
Oh, nice.
Simple, but effective.
Yeah. We thought it was only Tadej Pogacar who was going to complete the Grand Slam, but no, Liam Slock has done it first. I mean, his name, I think, will be forever remembered.
It will be. I know that Liam Slock. He flew across the finish line.
That's right. And then in future, we'll be like, ooh, we did a Slock. Oh, man, brutal.
I don't know how many Slocks there are going to be in the rest of my life.
Hopefully not many, to be fair. But anyway, the more I look at that photo, the more I think it's just absolutely bonkers.
It is, isn't it? Anyway, well done, Kay Khan. Get in touch with us via message on Facebook with your address and we'll get a bottle sent out to you. This week's photo comes from one of the podium celebrations at the Tour of Belgium last week. This is Victor Hannes of Team Aro, that's all I needed.
Nice, brilliant.
I did the intonation all wrong there. I will get you started. Actually, a quick description, Si, for people that are listening on podcast.
He is drinking an enormous beer on the podium, but unconventionally, the beer glass has handles on either side. Handles that are kind of as big as my ears, in fact.
Almost, yeah. Right, I will get you started. Don't tell me I can't handle my beer.
Nice, I like that.
Cheers.
Very good. If you think you can beat Dan's caption, then get involved. As we said, stick your witty caption in the comments section down below. We'll pick a winner next week.
Crikey. We will shortly let you know what's coming up on the channel this week, but first up, some comments from last week's video, of which there were four. Last week's show was about Remco's incredible numbers at FTP, mainly in Threshold. Graham Reek put, Remco's troubles are between his ears, not his legs. That's it. That sounds wrong when you read it out.
It really does.
I didn't think about
Graham,
it when I read it.
I don't know what you know between Remco's legs, but keep it to yourself, lad.
Oh, quality. Yeah, that was a lot better, that comment, than I originally thought.
Okay, but we kind of know what you mean. Yeah. Perhaps it is.
Maybe he did. Maybe it was just very cleverly worded. Or not cleverly worded, I don't know.
Okay, and next up, Matty G. Size mullet is evidence that the Australian lifestyle is wearing off on him.
Yeah, lots of comments about your mullet size.
Well, yeah, Stacey, I had it cut back in just the other day. Yeah.
I'm in desperate need of a haircut. I'm saving it until just before I go to the Tour de France to get a little hot tech.
Oh, nice.
Stacey O'Dell put, nice to see Si adopting the Aussie mullet look. Take 10 years off him. I replied under GCN's account, so I said, 10 years off 55. Stacey somehow knew it was me, even though I didn't put Dan at the end of that, but lol, good one, Dan.
You can't get anything past Stacey, that's for sure. But also, thanks, mate.
No worries.
It was my birthday, actually, just a couple of days ago, but I'm not 55.
No, not yet.
Not yet, no. What we learned said that I'm a bit concerned about the health of GCN's budget. Clearly no money for any wax for Mr. Lloyd, nor to deal with Si's raging mullet. Major recession indicator.
Yes.
We've actually, apart from Dan's makeup budget, we've never had anything to contribute to our aesthetics, have we?
No, can't even put haircuts and expenses, can we?
No.
Unbelievable, really.
No, nor irons. No, it really is. It's a tough life, isn't it, mate?
So it doesn't look too bad today, but it is fresh.
Well, I was going to say, I haven't been anywhere near this one yet. So,
Christian Kruer, oh, this is the comment that you mentioned earlier. So, a Danish native here, you smashed the Vingegaard pronunciation after the help. Vingegaard.
Hopefully, Christian, we've still nailed it 1 week on. We might just need to have like a little thing at the top of like everything we do, just to sort of phonetically pronounce Vingegaard. Okay, and then Edward...
This is under that when to upgrade clipless pedals.
Oh, sorry, I've missed a bit, yeah. We had our friendly contributor Naomi, didn't we, join Connor on that one? Edward Jed Nax says, Naomi is priceless. Her enthusiasm is infectious.
Mm. Matthew Mabarang, Naomi's positive energy convinced me to go for clip-in pedals. Connor and Naomi are on point about using half a clipped pedal on one side and a flat pedal on the other, especially on my typical kind of riding for commuting and bike packing on tarmac and gravel. Guess this is the time to start using SPD-specific pedals together with gravel bike or mountain bike shoes too.
Yeah. Touring Tony, though, says, I ride up to 16,000 kilometres per year and use flats. I got into cycling at 48, and no, I'm not interested in falling off and injuring myself because I'm older, just to learn how to ride cleats. And yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with flat pedals. The only issue is if you start trying to ride faster, and that's where I think you find the limit of flat pedals, isn't it?
Absolutely nothing wrong, like you said, with flat pedals. And I explained in a recent video, with Lorraine, why she will only ride flat pedals, and I think it's justified. Cleat position. So this was Si and Connor looking into the position of the cleat further back on the shoe. The down
opened Pandora's box, we did, mate.
Yeah, as you intended. The down under verse, I was a chronic heel dropper, moved cleats as far back as I could, went from 172.5 to 165 cranks, all in 2022. Made some changes to saddle position, biomechanics totally changed, foot became more stable, so no more heel drop. Power and endurance went up substantially, fatigue resistance improved, muscle recruitment better. It was a massive win for me.
Wowee. James Smudge said, Bike Fit James has been saying for years that most people have their cleats too far forward. This is due to the foot being a terrible lever. Now, I've got issues with this, Dan.
You don't think your foot is a terrible lever?
Well, so when you look at someone running, the foot is a perfectly acceptable lever, and humans do some incredible things on their feet. So I don't think you can say that the foot is a terrible lever. I think the foot is a great lever.
I guess there are many other sports where it has to act as a lever going up.
How do you mean up?
Well, if you want to sort of pull up through the pedal stroke. What do you
think? People aren't talking about it. They're talking about it in terms of pushing down. Oh, yeah, but I just don't agree with that at all.
Are you not just using your foot as a lever when you stood still?
On the bike or
no, stood.
Well, yeah, it stops you falling over, doesn't it?
Yeah. That's
what I mean.
It's pretty good, isn't it?
Humans have definitely evolved to use our feet as levers. Like you watch people jumping 2.30 meters in the Olympics, and it's a pretty good lever. You watch people sprinting 9.6 seconds at 100 meters. Seems like quite a good lever.
Yeah.
Watch Matthew Van Der Poel doing what he does. Seems like a pretty good lever.
Yeah. All right. I think you've made.
So anyway, Bike Fit James. I'm not sure about that, but to finish off the comment, James Smudge said, "Mine are slammed as far back as I can get them, and I found that it was a lot easier on my calves and not as much strain on my feet, with no noticeable change in performance."
Jace Smudge, I think, is his name, rather than James. Or is that what you said?
Oh, sorry, Jace Smudge, yeah.
Almost nailed it.
Yeah, basically.
Okay, Matt Coleman. Two fitters wanted me to slam my cleats back, and I let one do it. Then I experienced a lot of pressure on my plantar and ended up causing pain when I didn't have any before. Moved them much closer to where they were and updated my metatarsal pad. Fitters don't realise they're affecting change by making significant cleat changes to someone who's been riding for years. Any movement for me must be small and slow for my body to get used to it. So in your video, you may say there's no effect or long-term effect, but there could be.
So we're going to do a follow-up to that vid, because, like I said, we did open Pandora's box, and a lot of the things we talked about, any bike fitter that says there is a rule that there is one way of doing things and that's the best is naive at best, I think.
This is a rule in general I've heard about recently, that the more certain an expert is that their way is right and the only way, unless you should trust them.
Yeah, so the way I see it is that bike fit, you have like a toolbox at your disposal of things that you can do and adjust depending on someone's biomechanics, depending on their history, whether they present with pain or they're after, you know, they want to do an Ironman or they want to win the Tour de France. And then you've got all those things that you can manipulate, but to say you should move your cleats back or you should use short cranks, like I say, I just think that's arrogant and naive, potentially. So anyway, we're going to do a little follow-up and see whether we can dive into a little bit more.
Nice one. Underneath the Vattenrunden 315-kilometre race with the Supernose side, Ollie and Alex, Ryan 1960 put our group, Frederikshof Sub 10 Brostugan, shared the starting group of 5:04 in the morning with you. We were all a bit starstruck. Well done and great video.
Oh, no way. So you were in our start pen. That's cool. We started behind this bonkers three-wheeled Honda Goldwing. Yeah. It looked like...
I watched that video with Lorraine in my own time yesterday. Our own time, I should
say.
Did
you?
Yeah.
You're going to take it back, though, aren't
you? Yeah, I'll get a loo half an hour.
Yeah, that's cool. No, crikey. 948320Z. Props to Alex, despite not having lost the race on either finish line, for being the first one to brave the surstrumming. And yeah, I mean, to be fair to the lad, he was game.
Right, I'm going for it.
Down the hatch.
He was, yeah. I think he was a bit worried that after he'd had it, you two weren't going to...
Well, after his reaction, I really didn't want to have it.
His reaction was not the best. For me, the best reaction was Ollie watching Alex eat. I've never seen Ollie laugh so much in my life.
It was good, though, wasn't it?
Darkie 69, there was a Swede who did it in 8 hours, 7 minutes on his own. No group, no drafting, just him and his bike. A new record for fastest around the lake solo. The previous record was 8 hours, 10 minutes. Oh, he must have been bricking it towards the end.
I bet, yeah. Well, talk about taking the wind out of our sails. Three of us battering round in 8:08.
That's why I put that comment in, sorry.
Yeah, thanks, mate.
No worries.
By the way, just before we go on to what's coming up, just to circle back to that point about bike fit, because I was thinking about that. That's why... so many people have positive stories about short cranks, like midfoot cleat positions, long cranks, forward cleat positions, because everyone's different, right?
Yeah.
So that's why you can have all of these people commenting under the video with really valid experiences and you know, points of view. But that's why all has to be taken into consideration.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, it's the same with saddles, right? The most comfortable saddle in the world for one person is the worst for another.
Yeah, the only thing we can all agree on with saddles is the colour.
Yeah, brown, good. Black also good. Right, on the channel this week then, on Thursday, we spoke about Naomi a little bit early on, beginner to 100 miles.
Yeah.
Quite a big challenge in store.
She has indeed. So Naomi is going out to Finland. Do you remember the ride I did in Finland last year, the Saimaa Cycle Tour, where I had to do 300 kilometres around a lake, and it ended rather sadly for me at the side of the road.
Oh, yes.
Being a little bit sick. I did finish. But anyway, Naomi is going to do the gravel event, which is attached to it, which is super duper cool. Anyway, she has been filming that one with Connor. So that's excellent. On Saturday, what's going to decide the Tour de France, Dan?
Yeah. Is this the real motor doping?
The real motor doping, yeah. So
earlier this year, of course, some smart technicians managed to make a wheel for us, which allowed you to basically cheat with some extra power. This is not about that, because there's been no evidence of that at the Tour de France ever, but rather, how much difference are the motorbikes and vehicles making at the Tour de France, and are they helping decide the results of each stage?
Spoiler alert, it will blow your minds.
Mm. And on Sunday, it's your video.
That's right, yeah. So we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, actually, about dangerous driving and how the law doesn't seem to punish people in proportion to the...
crime, really.
Well, yeah, essentially. I've been on a bit of a journey investigating that one, speaking to some very intelligent people on a subject that I knew nothing about, but I do now. And anyway, hopefully you'll find that one interesting as well.
Great stuff. Right, it's time for the nugget. We're not going to do that, obviously, which might disappoint one person, but probably not. Instead, the nugget comes from, sort of an interesting thing that happened to Si on his gravel ride.
Well, that's right. Obviously we know that bike tech is improving, leaps and bounds. I found the Achilles heel. Dan, not just of SRAM Redix Blur, not just of Shimano GRX Di2, not mechanical, everything. Basically, none of that stuff works. So this photo was taken on a ride that was on Friday evening. And this was everyone, basically, we tried to ride through a field, taking a shortcut that had just been mown. And within about 50 metres, everyone's bikes had completely jammed up to the extent that it took about 15 minutes.
What a great shortcut.
Yeah, we had to, like, everyone was pulling wheels out. We were, like, tearing. Anyway, so, yeah, whatever you do, like, if Unbound ever takes a shortcut through a field, just put your bike on your shoulder and run. Nice. None of them can withstand it.
Okay.
So there we go.
Great nugget, son. Right, we'll be with you again this time next week. See you then.
Sid's looking very uncomfortable in the corner right now. This is to be deleted. No bloopers.